That incredible picture of the three tramps of Dealey Plaza, November 22nd, 1963, the names of Frank Sturgis, Daniel Carswell, your father, keep coming up, others as well. But I've got to tell you, the tramp, the third tramp, does have some kind of uncanny resemblance to your father.
Well, it's truly amazing. My father was a very unique-looking individual. I mean, of course, I can sense his features, with some degree of surety. And when I saw that comparison photo, and I did see it the very first time it came out, I saw it posted on a telephone pole that said CIA killed JFK. It was a lecture slideshow that was being held at a local university. When they showed that comparison photo, I almost fainted, because that individual, the short tramp with the hat on, looks, to me, my gut feeling as his child, that looks exactly like my father.
And the fellow in front of him looks just like Frank Sturgis, who also was implicated in Watergate. And I do believe your father mentioned his involvement in JFK's assassination as well, did he not?
Well, yes, he did. As a matter of fact, that does look a lot like Frank Sturgis. I would say the only difference would be the hair of Frank, being a Cuban, had curlier hair. But, that can be certainly altered for the sake of appearance. My father testified before the various Senate committees that he had never met Frank Sturgis until 1971, when he was introduced to Frank by Bernard Barker. But in the memos and in conversations I had with my father, he revealed to me that, in fact, he had known Frank for a long time, that they had worked together during the Bay of Pigs operation.
What's so incredible, too, about this picture, St. John, is other than the person purported to be your father, who truly looks like a tramp, he had dirty clothes and a ruffled shirt and everything else, the two people in front of him have clean shoes, clean pants. I mean, they look... They look just like preppies.
Yeah. In fact, they do look like they're well-washed.
Now, your father, of course, sends you this tape. We're going to play this in just a moment. And I've got to ask you this. Do you, first of all, believe his story? I mean, he's named LBJ. He's named a fellow by the name of Cordmeyer, who was with the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
What if your father was just lying to protect himself, to protect all of you, and to protect those who truly might have been involved in the JFK assassination?
Well, a couple of points here. I don't think he would have lied, because at that point there was no pressure from any other angle that would have caused him to create a story. Second of all, if he were interested in creating or fabricating a story about the JFK assassination, he certainly would not have implicated some of his closest associates in the Cuban exile community and in the CIA, and certainly would have not implicated by inference the American government itself. He would have much more than likely fabricated a story involving a Soviet plot, painting a picture that Lee Harvey Oswald was a Soviet sympathizer, that was a Soviet agent or something along those lines. He was still an agency man, my father was, and although he had been bitterly bitter about his treatment by the American government, the Nixon White House, he was still at heart a patriot and would have not had said anything to sully the reputation of the CIA or the American government.
Do you believe your father could have been, if he's one of these tramps in this picture, could have been involved in the assassination?
Well, the photograph of the tramp certainly looks very, very much like my father. By my father's own testimony to me, by his own admittance to me, he was a bench warmer, those are his words, in the the big event, which was the running code name for the assassination to kill President Kennedy.
Sure. So he knew it was coming down. Right.
Well, according to what he told me, he knew that it was coming down. He had attended a couple of meetings at safe houses in Miami, Florida, and apparently the plot was to have taken place in Miami.
All right. Now, we're going to listen to a tape. You're going to hear some names mentioned. This is the voice of E. Howard Hunt in a tape that he sent to his son, St. John Hunt. It's a longer version of the tape. What you're hearing is an edited, shorter version.
I heard from Frank that LBJ had designated Cord Meyer Jr. to undertake a larger organization while keeping it totally secret. Cord Meyer himself was a rather favored member of the Eastern aristocracy. He was a graduate of Yale University and had joined the Marine Corps during the war and lost an eye in the Pacific fighting. I think that LBJ settled on Meyer as an opportunist, Perrin like himself, a Perrin, and a man who had very little left to him in life ever since JFK had had taken Cord's wife as one of his mistresses. I would suggest that Cord Meyer welcomed the approach from LBJ, who was, after all, only the vice president at that time, and of course could not number Cord Meyer among JFK's admirers. Quite the contrary. As for Dave Phillips, I knew him pretty well at one time. He worked for me during the Guatemala project. He had made himself useful to the agency in Santiago, Chile, where he was an American businessman. In any case, his actions, whatever they were, came to the attention of the Santiago station chief. And when his resume became known to people in the Western Hemisphere Division, he was brought in to work on Guatemalan operations. Sturges and Morales and people of that ilk stayed in apartment houses during the preparations for the big event. Their addresses were very subject to change, so that where a fellow like Morales had been one day, you're not necessarily associated with that same address the following day. In short, it was a very mobile experience. Let me point out at this point that if I had wanted to fictionalize what went on in Miami and elsewhere during the run-up for the big event, I would have done so. But I don't want any unreality to tinge this particular story, or the information, I should say. I was a bench warmer on it, and I had a reputation for honesty. I think it's essential to refocus on what this information that I've been providing you, and you alone, by the way, consists of. What is important in the story is that we've backtracked the chain of command up through Cord Meyer and laying the doings at the doorstep of LBJ. He, in my opinion, had an almost maniacal urge to become president. He regarded JFK as he was, in fact, an obstacle to achieving that. He could have waited for JFK to finish out his term and then undoubtedly a second term. So that would have put LBJ at the head of a long list of people who were waiting for some change in the executive branch.